Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, and fantasy genre. And I'm your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And tonight's episode of Constantine is Quid Pro Quo, and Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us.
Quid Pro Quo originally aired on January 23rd, 2015, when thousands of people in Brooklyn, including Chaz's daughter, slip into comas. John must locate and defeat the evil forces responsible. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And this episode is directed by Mary Harron, who I believe is one of the first females to direct an episode of this show. And a lot of people might recognize the name as the female director of American Psycho.
Oh, I love that movie.
That movie
one of my faves.
Is my go-to date night movie. And if you can sit through American Psycho, then you are the woman I want to marry. There have been two women in my life that I have had long-term relationships with of whatever type of relationship we happen to have. And I brought out – it wasn't the first date, but it was a date. And they had never seen American Psycho, and they loved it when we watched it over breakfast.
Nice.
They're like, show me something really cool. And I was like, okay. She also directed The Moth Diaries, which is kind of like a lesbian vampire story. And I Shot Andy Warhol and the notorious Betty Page, all controversial movies of their when they came out.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think it was controversial at the time for her to direct American Psycho.
Oh, yeah, and considering that the novel was very anti-feminist.
Oh, completely. And I think she actually makes a starring role in it as well.
Yeah, I believe she plays one of the rich yuppies, right?
Yeah, you know, one that he kind of, ends up murdering at the end, but, she is one of, the friends, and she's, like, talks constantly and trying to get some coke and drinking a lot. Yeah, very talkative, but, in the show.
According to her IMDb, though, she only has one acting credit under her name. It's in a TV series called Pasadena.
Ooh.
So maybe she's uncredited in the role that you're speaking of?
Maybe, or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, she was born in 1953, and all the women in that movie were around the same age as Reese Witherspoon, who was in the film, too.
I might be wrong.
Yeah,
it's been known to happen, but,
yeah, I was going to say, because either the women were debutantes, like rich white yuppie debutantes, or they were hookers.
True.
And sure. That's another reason why the book is heavily, like, slandered by feminist groups and was blacklisted for a long time until, like, Mary was just like, no, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Apparently there's a remake coming out, but American Psycho is a whole other conversation, yes, not to get too off track. So we have this force that kind of creeps into this little girl's bedroom in the beginning of the episode, which we do not realize, which you learn is Chaz's daughter. And her and other people, as we said at the beginning, get put into comas.
Yeah, so the kid's name is Geraldine.
Yep.
And the we have to kind of set the table here. Dr. Chris actually made me aware that the storyline is actually somewhat based on the Hellblazer All His Engines storyline. So, you know, we picked up the graphic novel and read it, and it's actually the original storyline is his granddaughter whose soul is taken.
Correct.
And her name is Trisha. So Geraldine, you know, the daughter in the television show, is basically going to be put into a coma by this mysterious black smoke.
Correct. And then we cut over to the tower where John talks about the Resurrection Crusade is a delusional cult that Zed's father belongs to. Now, I don't know in the comic books who Zed's father is, but he's obviously a being of very high power in order for this to keep being the recurring theme of Zed's storyline.
Yeah, the father is actually the head of the Resurrection Crusade. You know, basically a cult leader. So I don't think he has any supernatural powers, but he is a cult leader, and he has some tie-in with angelic forces, because he's the one that's going to call the angel to inseminate Mary,
gross.
A.K.A. Zed.
Gross. Mr. Zeneca said it, inseminate. Yes, which is the act of how we are all created, but the way it's said out loud just sounds gross.
You know, it's only biology.
You know, I prefer the regular pornographic way of just saying coming inside you, but saying inseminate just sounds naughty and wrong. Like some kind of forced rape pregnancy, you know? Maybe that's just me.
You know, if you're following a cult and you are kind of forced into doing this and brainwashed into doing it, it might be considered a forced rape.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what Zed is actually trying to avoid by trying to get as far away from the Resurrection Crusade and her father as possible.
Correct. The Achilles heel thing is one thing I wanted to point out that he uses, Constantine uses in a spell, and Zed points out the Achilles heel, isn't that what killed Achilles? And
yeah, his weak point.
His weak point. We also learned that Chaz's real name is Francis by his ex-wife, Renee.
Yeah. always, when you're in trouble, they use your full name.
Correct.
Yeah. So the Achilles tendon that Chaz uses in the end of this episode, and also shown by Zed in the beginning of the episode, foreshadow, in the mythology, the reason that his heel was actually weak was because that was the only part of his body that wasn't dipped into the River Styx.
Correct.
The Achilles tendon would not have been powerful, but, you know. For TV, have to have a reason.
The one thing that I loved about this self-contained graphic novel is that if you didn't have not read any other issues of Constantine, this is a pretty in onto itself story, also giving you a bit of Chaz's backstory about his relationship with John. So you don't need to have read like all of the Hellblazer comic books leading up to this. I immediately picked up on that immediately when Chaz goes to the hospital to find out what is going on with his daughter. And then, of course, Renee has the, oh, you brought him. And I was like, oh, my God, it's that graphic novel.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's when it completely dawned on me.
Yeah, I was actually, for fun, watching the show and then flipping through the comic at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it pretty much kept the same pace up until we actually see Felix Faust.
Correct. The demon, there's a demon in the story named Baral. And the demon is then replaced after the summoning with the medium, and Zed getting more of Zed's like flashy visions and stuff like that. We find out that the wizard in question is Felix Faust, as played by Mark Margolius, who has been in most films directed by, and the name almost escaped me, Darren Aronofsky films.
Ooh,
he has been in Black Swan, Pi, Requiem for a Dream, and The Wrestler.
Great film.
Yes.
Great film.
And he currently has a standing stint as Hector Salamanca on Better Call Saul. Now, I've never watched Breaking Bad, so I don't know if this is a character who lives, and he does. I guess he's on Breaking Bad as well. But, yeah, this is the guy that says a very famous line from the movie Pi, "There is no order, only chaos."
Yeah, great actor. You recognize him when you see him, for sure.
Exactly. And he's, man, the guy has been around for a while. He was born in 1939.
Yeah, he's been in the acting world for so long.
Yes, definitely. We wanted to point out in this episode, mainly because we do have a elderly actor, a very famous elderly actor in this episode playing a very famous comic book character. Felix Faust, by the way, was created in Justice League number 10, Volume 1, back in 1962 when the Justice League were first founded. So he is a longtime member of the villains rogue gallery of the Justice League, having gone up against them, Wonder Woman, Superman, and always been a magic thorn in the pain in the ass.
He's with Shazam. And Black Adam, Dr. Fate, storylines. He's reputed to be over 7,000 years old.
Correct. He's been a part of the Secret Society of Supervillains, as well as Lex Luthor's Injustice Gang. Animated counterparts, he's been played by, get this, you would never believe the people who have played Felix Faust before. How about Peter Cullen, best known as Optimus Prime from Transformers? Or,
really?
Yes, Robert Englund, best known as Freddy Krueger from the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
Well, he makes a little bit more sense.
Yes. Or how about Dee Bradley Baker? Dee Bradley Baker is a longtime voice actor, having been on Dexter's Laboratory, Fairly Odd Parents, SpongeBob SquarePants, The Adventures of Grim and Mandy, various superhero shows, and played various Looney Tunes characters over the years.
Sure, I've heard him, but can't put a face to a name.
And currently appears on Justice League Action, which is the current Justice League cartoon series, which is a lot of fun to watch. A lot of episodes are written by former guest of the show, Paul Dini, best known as the creator of Harley Quinn, and he is voiced by Two and a Half Men star John Cryer. And then, of course, he was in the Justice League Dark movie, which we will get to in a review in our final episode covering Constantine, where we go over the Arrow episode, and we might also have a guest star from the comic books of Constantine. He's voiced by Enrico Colantoni, who's appeared on Monk, Numbers, Stargate, SG-1, and Bones.
You are a wealth of knowledge, Douglas.
Yes, he's been. The biggest one that always got me is I immediately knew it, and I never had to look it up, was the Justice League animated series where Robert Englund voiced him, in which he tries to take down Hippolyta and the Queen and the other Amazons. But here's a quick clip from the Justice League Dark episode movie where Constantine fights Felix Faust.
It. Well, it's off to the old magician's home for you, mate. Pudding night is Thursday. Try that fireball once more, Constantine. I'd love to see you cook your own goose. Stab me!
In that, Felix Faust tries to drown John Constantine in a bubble of water, but is saved by the Dark Knight himself, Batman.
One thing about this episode that takes a departure from the other Constantine episodes that we've watched is this is purely a Chaz storyline.
Correct, yes. We get to learn everything you wanted to know about Chaz that you would really care about.
Including the reason why he can never die.
Correct. That's the biggest part of this episode.
Yeah, so, you know, they do they tell the story in a few flashbacks throughout the episode,
mm-hmm.
but the story is, Constantine is extremely drunk, they're at a bar together, Constantine casts a Merlin spell of protection on Chaz, because, you know, he doesn't want him to get a DUI or into any sort of accidents on the way home. And he does it, like, so sloppily, so drunk, that it seems like it's meaningless drivel. Well, during the, after Constantine exits, and during the kind of Chaz moving his way towards the exit of the bar, a fire breaks out from the band, and 47 people actually lose their lives in this fire.
Now, imagine if the show was on the air around 2003 when the Rhode Island nightclub fire had happened.
Oh, that's the entire inspiration for the scene. It's the Station nightclub fire, February 20th, 2003. And this was the band Great White in West Warwick, Rhode Island. In 5.5 minutes, the indoor pyrotechnics basically set the acoustic foam on fire behind the drummer. Everyone kind of thought it was part of the show until the fire started reaching the ceiling and black smoke started filling up the room. 100 people were killed and 230 were injured. Now, the place was only supposed to hold 400 people, but there was a little bit more than 400 there.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the people kind of scramble to the exits and could trample over one another to the point where the exits are blocked, that's exactly how it was during that nightclub fire. And that's why so many people were killed, is just they couldn't scramble out of the building fast enough because the black smoke was so toxic and filled up the entire room so fast that no one knew what they were doing. They were trampling over everyone, and the doors were completely blocked, and a lot of people perished. So they're using that as inspiration for why Chaz has this power. Like, he has the weight of these 47 souls on him, and he feels that he needs to make their lives count. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so he helps John and you know, is basically the one that puts himself in harm's way when, you know, there are no other options. And by the end of the episode, he has 30 lives left.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, was there a count for this? Because I almost didn't care about the count, mainly because the show got canceled after a season.
Yeah, yeah. But, 47 lives lost. At the end, he ends with 30. So he's basically spent, you know, that difference at 17, 18 lives if you count himself, over 2 years of time. So living or working with John Constantine, you're basically using a soul every other month. And, you know, I guess it's tough work, but he's going through them pretty quickly.
Oh, by the way, I don't know, you live in Pennsylvania, Mr. Seneca, but were you born in Pennsylvania?
I was not. I was born in California.
Oh, okay. Because I'm going to say, you and Mark Margolis, a.k.a. Felix Faust for the episode, share the state of origin.
It's just the state of living for me at the moment.
Gotcha. I do like how they dressed up Mark in this episode. If you've seen pictures of Felix, other than his stupid-looking headdress with his little cloak in the back that hangs out the back, I don't know what that's called. It might be indicative of some culture on the planet, but I'm not really sure. It just looks ridiculous on the villain. The costume that he wears as the wizard in question is very indicative of what Felix Faust would wear.
Yeah, it's kind of flashy. Very much 1960s magic user.
When he says that this is the spell to protect Chaz used by Merlin the Magician on King Arthur, I am automatically thinking of the line from one of the producers that if we had season 2, we would have been introduced to Jason Blood, who many longtime DC comic book fans know as the knight who betrayed Arthur to Morgan Le Fay, and in order to redeem himself, he allowed Merlin to bond Jason Blood with the demon Etrigan.
Wow. That yes. would have been really exciting to see.
Yes, trust me. Jason Blood is a longtime DC comic character created by the late, great Jack Kirby in The Demon number 1. And I bring that up just because we also celebrate the 100th birthday of Jack the King Kirby this year.
Mm-hmm. Staying on that kind of thought train here, we've lost a soul recently, Stanley's wife.
Yes, I was actually getting that earlier. I got completely sidetracked when I mentioned elderly actors. Joan Lee.
Yeah, and she was 95, I believe?
Yeah, she was about a year older than Stan. If you want to know a little bit more about her backstory, you can read any autobiography by Stanley. He goes in great detail about his wife. They don't have any living children, unfortunately, due to some problems in the 50s. And but they are survived, you know, she survived, obviously, by Stan is still alive, and many nieces and nephews. A lot of people might know her voice more than her looks. She was a model, actually, for a long time. But, I mean, over time, obviously, she wasn't in the spotlight as much. She made cameo appearances in several movies, like the X-Men films being seen with Stan. But people would recognize her voice. She had a very distinguished British accent, and she was the voice of Madame Webb on the Spider-Man the Animated Series. She was kind of this psychic, mystic person who could transcend dimensions in the show. In the comics, she's just a psychic. But she would help Spider-Man by telling him of, you know, threats of danger that are coming that he needs to put a stop to. And she reprised it for the Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions video game perfectly. Again, she has a very distinct British accent voice. The other reason we might also bring this up is because this weekend that we're recording this, Spider-Man Homecoming is in theaters.
Yes, we are recording on July 9th, 2017.
Correct.
And that came out on July 7th.
Yes, and I actually have some great more Felix Faust quotes that I will play later on in the late in the episode as read by Robert Englund.
But nice, nice.
To the episode at hand, after we find out about the Merlin spell. Invisible dogs? Did you ever see the movie Predators with an S, the third Predator movie?
Yes, I have.
Okay,
yes.
So these dogs, these invisible hounds of hell or whatever they're called, look like the Pred dogs from that movie.
Yeah, it has kind of a tiger look, a little bit more predator look in the face. You can see kind of the protrusions, fangs of some sort. And the Faust actually calls it a Karabasan.
Okay.
And, fun fact, Karabasan is actually the Turkish name for the sleep paralysis condition. So it's a folk name for sleep paralysis. It literally translates to nightmare, but it's supposed to be like a dark attacker. And what a Karabasan, if you're talking about it in common parlance, is that it is a feeling of being smothered or pressure on your chest and that you cannot move whatsoever, but you are aware of what's going on. And that's the, basically the condition of sleep paralysis. Anyone that I've ever spoken to that has suffered through an episode of sleep paralysis has said that it's one of the most terrifying things in their entire life.
Oh my God. Is it as terrifying as having a, what is it called, a night terror?
I think worse, because with night terrors, you're at least able to move. Mm-hmm. And when you scream, you can actually scream. Sleep paralysis has this feeling of like this pressure on your chest and almost like you're being smothered. People that I have spoken to that have had a sleep paralysis episode has described it as the worst thing they've ever experienced. Because not only do you have this very like intense feeling of the pressure on your chest and being smothered, but that you can't move whatsoever. You're screaming in your head, but you can't actually scream or vocalize. You know, you can't move your arms. You can't even really move your eyes. It is absolutely terrifying to just be locked into position. And it's kind of a natural thing that happens when you wake and, you know, go to sleep. It's the body's protection when you're actually you're moving from waking to sleeping and your body does shut down in certain ways. But if your conscious mind wakes up before your body wakes up, that's basically what the sleep paralysis is. Different than night terrors, for sure. Night terrors, you're at least able to vocalize. And, you know, if you're sleeping next to someone that has night terrors, you definitely can hear them vocalizing.
John makes mention that, Chaz makes mention to his wife during another flashback about him and Constantine fighting the Monkey King. Do you know who the Monkey King is? It's an actual thing.
No, I did not look that one up.
Okay, so I'm going to mispronounce this completely because even on Wikipedia, they do not have a phonetic spelling of his name. But the Monkey King's real name is Sun Wukong, and he's a mythical figure who features in a body of legends which we trace back to the period of the Song Dynasty. He appears as a main character in the 16th century Chinese classical novel Journey to the West, which has been made into many different movies. He possesses immense strength and can lift up over to 20,000 pounds. Wow. He is capable of being transformed into many different clones of himself, as well as he can become many different weapons, objects, and animals to help people or to really, you know, screw up whatever they're trying to do. In the novel of Journey to the West, he is the monkey born from stone, acquires supernatural powers through the Taoist practices, and after rebelling against heaven, he's imprisoned under a mountain by a Buddhist monk.
Hmm.
So I would love to have seen that turned into an episode for
Maybe
John.
Maybe at some point it will be covered in a future animated Constantine show.
Correct. If we get any of the other any of the other actors back for voice acting for John Constantine's upcoming animated show in 2018.
And I just hope that they keep the researchers that they did for this show, or at least ones that are just as good, because I really, as I said in the last episode, I really enjoy dissecting these episodes and finding the roots of where everything is coming from. You know, the translations of the Latin words that they're talking and everything. It's delicious.
Correct. Chaz gets tired of Constantine's BS and decides to take matters into his own hands, knocking him out and confronting Felix Faust. Unfortunately, Faust has got the upper hand and slits his throat in a very gruesome, gory way. But I forget if Faust is aware of Chaz's resurrection ability.
At this point, no. Basically, Chaz is trying to convince Faust that he has this ability, and Faust doesn't really believe him. It's like, I see a loser in front of me, basically.
I see a cab.
One soul loser.
Yeah, I see a cab driver.
Yeah. Like, who are you? I'm a tough magician. I have the power of all these souls. And, you know, as the episode goes on, there are more and more people slipping into this coma. And so he's gathering in power and strength, and he still won't let this little girl's soul go because he just finds it hilarious to keep Constantine and Chaz and all these other people, you know, the wife, just kind of stringing them along, you know, changing the rules of the deals. He's, you know, wanting to get more out of Constantine because he's more powerful than Constantine and he's got him over a barrel. He's just kind of a jerk. I would say that's a pretty douchebag moment of the episode, you know, when he changes the deals.
Correct. There's not exactly any kind of yum moment in this episode. Nothing overly sexualized, nothing super hot. I mean,
no.
So we don't really give it to anything for that. But, yes, yeah, so the douchebag moment would definitely go to the classic DC villain.
Yes, Felix Faust. In the comic, the deal was actually changed a couple of times from the Master how do you pronounce that? Barul?
Barul, that's the only way I got out of it, yeah.
Yeah, Barul. So, in the comic, Constantine does this very classic Constantine move, is that he sets them up, and then through lies and deception and working on their natural instincts of these demons, cause them all to kind of work around each other. And then Barul sees through that and then ends up making a deal with the Death God, the one that Constantine made the deal with. So the Death God in the book is, I'm going to butcher this word, Mictlantecuhtli. It's basically the Death God of the Aztecs.
We think we're bad at this show. Wait until we deal with a show that has a whole bunch of ancient antiques and stuff. Ooh, boy.
Oh, no, I know. That's coming up later.
Yeah. We'll do something more lighthearted like Spawn, where all we have to deal with is, you know, like comic book references galore and that or whatever.
Yeah, not cursed objects. So, in the book, it's actually more elegantly wrapped up, you know, and it's Constantine is the one that's actually doing the deals, and Chaz is just basically along for the ride, versus in the show where this is completely a Chaz storyline, and Chaz is the one that ends up getting Felix into a position where he could not let go and he could not get out of the situation. Chaz is going all gung-ho, and at the end of the episode, spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't seen it,
I hope they're listening to the podcast. They've watched the episode. I'm not afraid of spoilers at all, by the way. We won't spoil anything coming up in future episodes, but if you're listening to this podcast, we are going to assume you have watched the episode and are a fan of the show. If you're not a fan of our podcast, you're tuning in because, oh, I like Constantine. Let's see what these two have to say. So we won't tell you what's going to happen in any episode coming up other than, like, you know John lives long enough to be on Arrow or something. So
yeah. No, I'm completely joking about that.
Okay.
But anyway, so the Achilles tendon wrapping around Felix's hand and then Chaz saying, now I'm changing the deal, and pulls out a hand grenade and pulls the pin. You know, one of us is going to regenerate.
Yes, and Renee has to witness her ex-husband, who she clearly still loves because she has a child with him. There's always going to be a connection there, whether or not you do love the person or not, witnessing her ex-husband being blown apart.
Yeah, right in front of her face. So pieces everywhere, a huge explosion, Constantine grabs her. Why she's thought that she could actually intervene in anything magical is beyond me, but I understand she's a mother. She wants to do whatever she can for her daughter, and she just doesn't know what she needs to do.
No, Mr. Zeneca, it's because of script.
but still, you know, even as a mother, like, you want to do whatever you can.
Yes.
You want to suffer in their stead if it's at all possible. And since she doesn't trust John, she's like, no, I'm going to solve this. And yet there's no way possible that she could.
Correct.
Yeah, but it brings her a little bit closer to understanding what Chaz goes through.
Uh-huh.
After the explosion, she asks whether it's painful for him. And Constantine says, oh, it's excruciating every time. And asks how long it'll take. And he goes, well, you know, depends on how violent the death was. And so it's one thing knowing that your ex-husband is regenerating and is, you know, using these lives for some greater good. Earlier in the episode, she complains, you know, fights with him about how he helps all these other families but doesn't help his own family. So now she understands the gravity of the situation, where he's actually putting his lives on the line for a greater good that's beyond her, beyond her capacities, beyond anything that she understands. And he takes not only physical wounds, but an emotional toll as well, because he has to suffer through this intense pain every single time. And so at the end of the episode, when she gives him this book of pictures, and it's basically all the 47 images of the people whose lives were lost in that nightclub fire, that he has the souls. So a very touching moment at the very end of the episode with Chaz's daughter going through and talking about each person, you know, and their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's extremely touching, because not only are the souls wrapped up with him, but he is honoring their spirit and their memories by keeping a portion of them alive in thoughts and memories, not only in his body.
And then John gets a message about, because Zed gets knocked out in the hospital, and she wakes up, and John gets a message from John from his mother that her death is not his fault, which leads me to believe that they may have been setting up a plot line in the future. We don't know, and I'm just speculating. So if you do find the information, leave it in the comment section below about where you're coming with your source or whatever, and so on and so forth,
mm-hmm.
about that John's mom is like Dr. Doom's mom. And if you know anything about Dr. Doom, his mom is forever stuck in like purgatory in a way by the demon Mephisto. You might know him from like the Ghost Rider movie. And she would pop up periodically in some capacity. And she's not just dead at childbirth because of giving birth to John Constantine. And I'm wondering if that's something they would have been setting up for like a season two or further down the line.
Possibly. Right after that admission from Zed, though, he kind of lays back in the bed, and I noticed immediately the first time I saw it was he actually lays back in the hanged man pose from the tarot cards.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the 12th card of the major arcana, but the hanged man pose, hanged man as a card, typically means like a self-sacrifice or duty, but it could also be punishment that's there of his own accord.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Zed's just basically been, had this, like, stroke-ish condition. Her, you know, she's got a brain tumor. And he is purposefully trying to do his duty by everyone around him, torn as to what to actually do about every situation. But he's there of his own accord.
Correct.
And I think that was a good little touch in the show.
By the way, what was the thing that John was looking through throughout the episode? Was that from the Ouija board?
No, that's actually called an adder stone.
Okay.
So an adder stone is a stone that typically is naturally made. You know, it's basically a stone that either was water had been poured onto it for such a long time that it wore through the stone, so it has a natural hole. It could be some geodes or whatnot that naturally have a hole in the center. But basically a true adder stone, in the druidic sense of the word, will float. And it gives it this like supernatural quality if it floats, like it's a stone that floats. But it is, in folklore, is believed to have magical protections, magical powers, protection against diseases, evil charms, and it also, and here's where it ties in with our creature, prevents nightmares. So because this beast is like a beast of sleep and literally a nightmare, looking through it was a protection against it. So you could see the nightmare coming for you. Outer stones, you could also say in some religions, you know, that this would also be considered a peep stone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are a Latter-day Saint, please forgive me, this is not going to be kind. Peep stone is basically what was looked through by Joseph Smith to translate the prophecies and the revelations that became the Latter-day Saints, you know, manuals.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. It's supposed to be an interpretation, and if you are a fan of the Book of Mormon,
nope.
The play.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The show. They talk about it in this very abbreviated version. But basically, a seer stone or a peep stone is supposed to find treasure. And the way it was used by Joseph Smith was that it translated these golden tablets that only he could see, and that became the basis for the religion.
Gotcha.
So it's a little different than adder stones, but along the same lines, is that it's supposed to find things that are not seeable otherwise. And if you haven't seen Book of Mormon, please do so. It is hilarious.
Yes, it's created by Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park and Team America World Police. Absolutely fantastic. IGN had a review of this episode talking about they felt as though it was a mishmash of too many things at once into a Constantine episode. And to make it instead of making a self-contained story based on a great graphic novel, they decided to substitute the demon for Felix Faust to give it an expansion for possibly Felix Faust returning in later episodes, which unfortunately did not happen. But maybe we can get Mark to come back for an episode of the animated Constantine show, or since there are other CW shows still currently running dealing with magic once in a while, maybe Mark could come back to play Felix Faust and go up against, you know, the Green Arrow or the Flash or the DC's Legends of Tomorrow. It could completely happen.
It could.
Yep.
It could. Felix Faust was known to not be in a body for long periods of time. So even if he's blown up, he's out there in the ether somewhere until some accidental summoning puts him into another body.
Correct. And he also has,
so it doesn't have to be the same actor.
Correct. And he also has a couple kids that have been menaces of the Justice League as well, usually used to try and resurrect their dad in some way. So he could also come back for that too. And also, there is a current season being filmed exclusively for Netflix of Young Justice, and which is the continuation of the canceled Young Justice TV cartoon series. It's going to be exclusively on Netflix. That's why Netflix has the first two seasons up there. One of the best DC animated shows since Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. He was in one episode of that, so he could possibly return for that as well. But the graphic novel that we talked about earlier, you can pick up at your local comic book store, order it from DC, or download it on Kindle or your any, you know, electronic devices. And it's called Hellblazer, All His Engines.
Yes. And one character that we never even talked about, Fennel.
Who?
Fennel, the psychic that, they did the little seance.
Yes. Oh my God. Completely forgot about him. Yes.
Yes. Same thing that happens in the comic book happens in the show. You know, he starts doing the seance, and as he's doing the seance and talking, the voice of the daughter talking through him, Felix Faust in the show basically talks through him and takes over, like, why are you talking to my soul, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then Fennel gets set on fire. You know, so both in the comic and in the show, he gets set on fire, and then the information that they get from that seance is what drives them to the next location. You know, two different locations from the television show and the comics, but, you know, it has the same type of drive. And I think that if you were to actually watch the show and read the comic at the same time, you can see just the similarities, you know, one by one by one. And if it wasn't for the introduction of Felix Faust and they went with Berule.
Berule.
Yeah. I actually think it would have been a creepier episode. There's a lot more, I guess, special effects that you'd have to do with Bear Rule.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, especially, like, the pool of dead bodies that he swims in.
Correct.
That's kind of creepy. But I actually think that this was a lot taken from the comics. And I do agree that Felix was just kind of shoehorned in there a bit.
But if they need to replace
I still like the episode.
Yeah, if they need to replace the demon just because they didn't want to use it, you know, and they I'm glad they decided to use a DC comic mainstay instead of just something that they would create for the show that had no connection to anything in DC comics. By the way, you can go on to Matt Ryan's Twitter right now, Matt Ryan Real. He was just at Indie PopCon. God, I would love him to come out to a Massachusetts convention. And he has a display of all his Constantine gifts that he got from fans.
Nice.
A picture on Twitter, which looks fantastic. So you can go there and check that out. The chances of us getting Matt on the show are very slim. He's probably contracted to do stuff related to the animated series, but who knows?
Yes.
Maybe I'll get him on Radio of Horror. Who knows? We'll see. Don't forget, you can also check us out on Twitter at ChrisDSAV, which is where you'll find most of the information about the Dead TV podcast, as well as Mr. Zeneca's.
My Twitter handle is at ElegantlyKinky. And my website, if you want to come to any of my events in the Philly area, it's elegantlykinky.com.
And you can find other episodes of the Dead TV podcast, as well as the other podcasts I do, Supernatural Creatures and Lore, on radiohorror.com, where this episode will be as of Wednesday on the 10th, 11th, 12th. I had to do my math correctly. And then don't forget, we also have a Facebook page, the Dead TV podcast. And we have 3 episodes of Constantine left to go after this, as well as 1 special episode covering the episode of Arrow he was on and the Justice League Dark animated movie. So stay tuned for that and everything else that we got going on here on the Dead TV podcast. Thank you once again, Mr. Zeneca.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Jessa Lanter for providing us our theme song with us.